evening, everyone. And this is our last class in the series we've been doing in Life at Ananda. And our topic this night tonight is our search for God. And I wanted to start by reading just a few selections from the first chapter of Swamiji's book, A Place Called Ananda. And this first chapter is called Yogananda's Mission to the West. Jesus told his Pharisee critics, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Every divinely ordained institution is created for the welfare of mankind and not for the sake of controlling anyone. Masters rarely create institutions. When they do so, it is as a means of serving people. Their aim is to inspire, not to control. Usually, they let their disciples bother with such things as founding institutions. Their mission is to promulgate truth and light in a world filled with the darkness of ignorance. It was one mark of Master's greatness that in addition to spreading truth and light, he also sacrificed himself greatly to bring about the formation of an organization. For a master of his stature, the cost must have been considerable. It went against everything that came most naturally to him. How often he sighed in longing for the unburdened life, wandering freely by the Ganges, teaching beneath a tree to those who wanted to listen, singing with devotion to the Divine Mother in the enraptured company of a small band of true devotees. Not once, but many times, he spoke of leaving everything behind and just roaming with God. Divine Mother, he cried, I will leave this work and never once look back. But he said later, Divine Mother disciplined me. I had to return and finish the work she had given me. Few people realize what it took to live with our guru. The courage, the strength of will, the devotion, the willingness resolutely to set self aside in joyful, unresisting service. Master never demanded anything of his disciples that he hadn't found them willing and eager to give. Hundreds, indeed many thousands, came to him. Few out of all that multitude had that extra bit of good karma to dedicate themselves unhesitatingly to the cause he had brought. Look at the matter in a broader perspective. For those whose karma it is to be yogis in this incarnation, to have been born an American in the 20th century is an extraordinary spiritual opportunity, but it is also one fraught with spiritual peril. Those who make the most of this opportunity will gain spiritually out of all proportion to other lives they lived in mountain caves and in ashrams in India. Really kind of amazing. And there's two particular sentences that I want to focus on tonight in my part of the sharing. The first is, thousands came to Master, but what extraordinary good karma those few who had the opportunity to serve his work with everything they had. And my dear friends and members of Ananda, we are part of that. It is our incredible good karma to be able to give our lives without any qualification. Well, I have this other thing I need to do and this and that, but without any qualification to the work Master started. And I've been reading an article recently from a talk of Master's from 1948 that I hadn't ever seen before. And he talks, it's 25 pages, single space, you know, and he talks about communities and how communities are the saving grace for our age. And then at the end, he says, and in 3 weeks, There will be a garden party at Mrs. Meyer's house in Beverly Hills, and we're going to be talking about communities, and I want you all to come. But in that talk, he said, religion, he said, so here is my plan for communities. Religion must be practical. Religion from the pulpit is gone. If religion does not give you freedom and happiness, it is no good. And that's, if when you bring those together, you can see how, yes, he established churches. Yes, he established organization. Ananda has churches and organization. But the communities he saw as a way, home, job, and church in one place, total life commitment, total self-offering. And, you know, think about it. Every once in a while, I start thinking about it, and then I get afraid and I pull back. But out of all the disciples Master had, three attempted to start communities. Swamiji, Oliver Black, one of his most advanced disciples in Michigan, but that's became more of a retreat center like the Expanding Light, and now it's kind of eclectic. And then Norman with Sunburst, but that also is eclectic. So of all the disciples, of all of those who Master sowed his seeds in the ether, Swami picked it up, and Ananda, 42 years in existence, and here we all are. I mean, you know, the beauty of Ananda is none of us have a sense of self-importance, and that's why when somebody asked Swami, we mentioned this last time, what's Ananda's mission, and he said to have fun, because he doesn't want us to feel self-important. But at the same time, in the back of our minds, we always have to keep in mind the importance of what it is we're doing for the salvation of the planet and for the moving forward into Dwapara Yuga, into a higher consciousness. And so for our search for God, we need to understand that by fulfilling the guru's mission, we are burning up our karma. We are moving towards freedom. And even if we think, oh, I'm such a poor devotee, I don't meditate well, I'm glad I've never kept a score sheet of my meditations over the years, because it would be probably a lot of dud, dud, dud. Oh, got a little lift off there. But it doesn't, we can't measure ourselves in those terms. We have to see the fact that in this lifetime, for whatever good karma, we have been given this opportunity to live in a total, as we've been saying from the beginning, not just the total yogic lifestyle, but to, I can't imagine any other life, even if I had found autobiography, even if I had become a disciple, where I could have immersed myself so completely in my devotion and my service. And it would have been, knowing who I am, if I was just doing it in a lukewarm way, it would have died out. I wouldn't have kept doing it. I needed the challenge. And just as it was thrilling, these words, when Swami said, what it took to live with Master, the courage, the self-discipline, the willpower, the dedication. And it was no small thing. Swamiji said when Master was at Mount Washington, while he was alive, Mount Washington was like a hotel with a revolving door. People came and they left, and they came and they left, because they couldn't take that. Well, we need to understand Master's power is here to the extent that we will let it be. And to the extent, and also it's said in that he never pushed anything, to the extent that we say, I want to find God through serving your mission and through my utmost dedication, he will say, okay, let's get going here. And will it be easy? No. Will we have to look at things about ourselves that we don't like to look at? Assuredly. Will we be able to deal with them with Master's grace? Yes, we will. But we need to quietly, within our hearts, without banners, without publicity, just to rejoice in what is happening at Ananda and what we are all creating together, the unity, the underlying vision. And I don't think it seems like it's getting accelerated. I don't think a week goes by that something incredible is happening. Gyandev with these incredible yoga videos he created, Diksha with the cooking videos, which are just superlative. And now, just starting this week, we're having a group of people have had the wonderful idea to start this conscious food council, which will be a way of integrating all the food production and distribution throughout the community and looking at the ramifications of all of that. And it just every week something happens that is just like, wow, this is amazing. And it's just that flow of grace that's coming through. Laurelwood, we have our own 500-room dormitory and Ananda House, the assisted living care for devotees who are in that stage of the fourth ashram of life. And it just goes on and on without letting up. It's so amazing and so beautiful. And we need to understand that this is how we are finding salvation. God is transforming us through this, through our sincerity, through our effort, but also through serving his mission. And then the other point that was so important that he said, we could be having many, many lives. And how often, I know it's true for Jyotish, for me, probably for all of you, where we'd say, wow, it would be nice just to be in seclusion for about 3 months, you know, or just that, you know, I wished I didn't have meetings all day long and problems and emails and all of those things. But what Swamiji said, we wouldn't be making the spiritual progress that we are by living in this 20th century, trying to create a beachhead of spirituality in this age of turbulence and materialism. And Swami has said a few years ago, he said, Ananda Village should be the fountainhead of all of our work. It should be the high point from which the spiritual inspiration flows out into all the rest of the communities and centers and all the different things that we're doing. And so again, we need to understand, how is it the fountainhead? Not because we're self-important, not because we have billboards that say we are number one, but simply by the depth of self-offering and devotion and attunement with our guru. And in the village, again, let's be honest, no other part of Ananda has the opportunity for this level of integration. You know, maybe they have this here and that here, but it's not brought all together in the way it is here. And so we need to be good stewards and custodians for what we've been given and say, I will hold this up to the highest that I can, not only for my own salvation, but because I know what flows out from here will reach people that I don't even know, that I've never heard of. Padma, Nayaswami Padma, who's one of our the leaders of our Seattle community, just sent this beautiful letter. They just had a big Kriya weekend last weekend. They had 108 people for a Kriya initiation and I think 22 new ones. And she sent me a letter that someone had sent her just saying, I was very nervous about getting Kriya. I didn't know what it would be like. But she said, feeling the love and the rapport, she said, it was like being in a spiritual family on the highest level I can imagine. And she said, it will be one of the highlights of my life. And so it just flowing out to all the different areas. Right now, Pranaba and Devarshi are traveling to Dallas to do a Kriya weekend. It just keeps flowing and flowing and flowing. And Swami also challenged us some years ago, probably 4 or 5 years ago, where he said, each of you in this lifetime should expect to be, work towards becoming Jivan Muktas in this lifetime. That means freed while living. burning up your karma, not making any more new karma. And, you know, at first, it's funny when things like that get thrown out because there's the initial rush and then there's the recoil. Oh, I can't do that. That's way too big, way too high. And we've shared this story with some of you before, but some of you haven't heard it. After Swami kind of threw out that challenge, Jyotish and I were talking, and I said to him, you know, I just don't feel like, oh, we told this story last week, actually, didn't we? That being a Jiva Mukta, I don't feel like I'm on that level. And Jyotish said, well, you better expect it and have plan B. And then the rest of the stories, we were up in Seattle and we told that story and everyone laughed. And then Jyotish was speaking second and he stood up and he said, for those of you who don't know me, I'm plan B. So anyway, but the point is, we need to understand when Swami throws that out, it's not to say, I am putting an impossibly high bar that you will forever be looking at and saying, I'll never jump over that. I think really what he's saying is this will happen if you are sincere and if you keep serving and seeking God. And if you don't put any barriers up to it, really that's all he was saying. Not that you have to do cartwheels. He was saying just don't put up barriers and let Master do the rest. And so in our search for God in the community, I really can't imagine a more optimal environment to find God and serve God than what we all have here. And the world at large, there's turbulence, there's unrest, there's turmoil. But what we are doing, you know, in the Bible, the Old Testament, Sodom and Gomorrah, and Lord said, if I could find 10 righteous men and women, I would not destroy the city. But there weren't that, and so the city was destroyed. And it's sort of the converse with Ananda. By starting off with a dozen and then many dozen and then 100 and then maybe several hundred of righteous people, people who are trying with deep sincerity to tune into Master, to serve him, to be in tune with him, the upliftment that it brings to the world is much more than we can imagine. And we get letters and testimonials every day from all over the world in through our Sangha outreach, just saying, you are a lifeline to me in the darkness of this world. And it's not just the people doing the website or writing emails, but it's each one of us who maybe we're tired, maybe we're discouraged, and we get out there and we do something that we really didn't feel like doing. It uplifts the whole planet. There was, Swami tells the story of Norman Paulson when they were building, I believe it was working on the Hollywood church, I believe it was. And they were nailing studs in the wall and it was going to be covered up with sheetrock. And Norman was taking great care to nail in each nail so it would be just perfect. And somebody came up to him and said, what are you taking so much time with that? No one will see that. And Norman answered, no, God will see it. Christ will see it. And to do something with that level of consciousness creates sacredness. And when I look around at Ananda, I see sacredness everywhere. I see sacredness in the smiles and the selflessness and the dedication and the creativity and the joy that flows everywhere around. And then we need to also remember the role of Master, because we are his instruments. With this part of his consciousness being manifested into the world. And so his grace is there in our lives. And if the more and more we can say, everything I do, when I go and get my mail out of my box, when I put the mail in the little mailboxes, everything that I do, cleaning the rooms at the expanding light, whatever it might be, everything I do, I will consciously try to be an instrument for Master's grace and to interact with each other in that way. There was a beautiful story that we read. It was a parable. I don't think it was actually a true story, but it was the story was of a what had been an ancient and very holy monastery. And the years went by, and the young people kind of drifted away and stopped coming. And there were just a few old monks left in this monastery, and they knew when they died, what had been this great center of spirituality would be gone. And the head monk said, I must find a way to save our monastery. And so he went out, and he heard there was a very holy man, a hermit, that lived far away in the forest. And so he went and he found this, with great effort, found this hermit living in the forest. And he said, he explained the situation to him. There are no new monks coming, and there are just a few of us old ones left, and we're dying out. And how can we keep our monastery going? And the old hermit just said, oh, this is a terrible problem. I'm so sorry. But he didn't give him any advice. And just when the man kept asking him questions, the head monk, and finally he realized that that was all that was going to happen. And so he began to leave, and the old hermit said, oh, by the way, one of the monks in your monastery is the Messiah. And that was it. And so the head of the monastery went back, and he said, this is so strange, and I don't know what to make of this. And so he told all the other monks, and they all were puzzled, but they began thinking about it. And they thought, well, I know it's not me, but maybe it's Brother Leo. He's so holy, and he's so humble, and he's always so joyful. And he began treating Brother Leo as if he were the Messiah. And Brother Leo, in his turn, thought, well, I know it's not me, but maybe it's Brother Juniper. Selflessness he exhibits, and always thinking of others first. And he began treating Brother Juniper as if he were the Messiah, and on, they all thought that one about the other. And they began treating each other that way, and the whole atmosphere began changing, and young people started coming and picnicking on the grounds of this, what had been this robust, dynamic spiritual center. And little by little, they began asking the monks, well, what are your practices here? And little by little, a few began joining, and then more, and then more, and then more, until finally, once again, this monastery became a great center of spiritual power. Well, this is, if we try to see that, I try to live each moment with the sense that I am an instrument for Master in this world, but also to see each other in that way, to see the holiness and the sacredness of each other. I remember once, many years ago, I was at a meeting, and it was in a room that had some crystals hanging in the window, and the way the light was coming in, these crystals were shining like a beautiful colored light on every person's forehead. And I was just sitting there thinking, wow, this is a meeting with illumined beings. You know, it was just, and I don't even know what the meeting was about, but I remember the light on their forehead shining. And this, if we can relate to each other that way, to see the sacredness of every person in this community. Every person in this community is here for a reason, because they have the good karma and the grace of Master to live here. And the more we can do that, live as an instrument and honor each other as instruments, and then feel Master's grace flowing through us in all that we do, whatever choices we make, if we make good choices, if we make bad choices, just to honor the grace of what's happening at this first World Brotherhood community, successful, enduring, that Master wanted to see happening in the world. It's really, we're living, that's why when my mind starts to go there, I get a little bit afraid and I come back, because it's like, this is big. This is really big, and I think I'd rather just get my mail from the mailroom and not think about how big this is. But if we can, with humility and not self-importance, just not be afraid of the sacredness of our community, let it be the most glorious light for God that we can possibly imagine. And this will be how each one of us will be caught up in this beautiful rising fountain of Master's grace and blessings. And at the end of all of our service, all of our activity, all of our trials and fulfillments and confusion and darkness and light and everything we go through, if we can just say, Master, I never gave up. We created this community. We will find God, and through our example, we will draw many people into the orbit of your grace.
So. I had a very interesting dream two nights ago. And in the dream, there was a satsang, kind of like tonight, but a little bit smaller. And someone asked the question, what is the most important spiritual practice? What is the most important thing that we can be doing? And the reason it was interesting is because so quickly and so powerfully into my mind came the answer, the most important thing is to keep your energy flow moving in a positive direction, and everything else will follow from that. And so, as Davy was talking, that's partly why this community is magic. It's not that we're able to do it all the time, but if you compare it to other circumstances, other environments, other ways of living, by and large, the movement of energy is almost always positive in the community. Very few exceptions. Now, all of that starts with the feelings in the heart. And so what we need to do, if it's true that moving the energy in a positive direction is the most important thing, then what we have to do is we have to watch the feelings in the heart and practice those things that move the energy positively, and just let go, disregard those things that move it negatively. And so all of us are subject to the delusion of Maya that moves things up and down, positive and negative. But if we simply do not give energy to the little negative movements in our heart, and give lots of energy to the positive ones, that energy by and large will move in the proper direction. The attitudes that are most important is, first of all, gratitude. We gave a webinar last night, and it was on gratitude, and Thanksgiving's coming up a week from today. And it's the time, a national time, a time all around the world, where there's a remembrance, at least supposed to be a remembrance of God and of thankfulness to God. That's certainly why President Lincoln created it during the Civil War. Isn't it interesting that our National Day of Thanksgiving was at one of the darkest hours in our nation's history? And Lincoln said, Master said he was a great yogi from the past. He said, what we need in this dark hour is a day of thanksgiving, and declared the national holiday of Thanksgiving, which has been followed ever since then. So the attitude, the creation of the vibration of gratitude for everything, and as Davy was talking, not only for everything, but for everyone. We have this beautiful, beautiful community where it is so much easier to appreciate each other, partly because of the rich, rich intermixing of vibration and time together and kindnesses that everybody has done for each other, and it creates a flow, a kind of a matrix, a rich bed of positive flow, and it's easier in a positive time to appreciate what God has given you and to appreciate the others around you. In this same article, Master was saying that all unhappiness is due to, if you trace back, every time you get unhappy, if you trace that back, it's because you had a desire. And he was talking just so powerfully about how communities will help you move away from the kind of interaction with the world that allows the desires of the heart to kind of settle down. He said, "I love being in the desert," as Davy was quoting. He kept saying, "Oh, it would be so nice to be in the Himalayas." He also had a little retreat in the desert, and he would go there, and he said he loved being there just to be able to disconnect and just be there with God. But he knew, just as we know, that his dharma was not to be in seclusion in the desert. It was to work in the world, to sacrifice his life and give a gift of his life to the world. Now, that didn't make him unhappy, giving his life to the world. It was his joy to do it, just the same as it's our joy, our blessing, to be able to do the same. So keeping the energy in the heart positive, and I would say the simple practice of that is keep trying to have a positive flow of energy by japa, by chanting, by thinking of Master, by being kind, and most of that flow will be positive. When you find the energy of the heart going in a negative direction, catch it as soon as you possibly can and try to affirm the opposite. The opposite positive quality will neutralize that and move the energy positively. There's a very nice visualization that we can use for this. It was a story told to us by, read from that newsletter last week, of the disciple of Anandamoy Ma, Mangalananda, who does that newsletter. But when he was here last year, he told us quite a remarkable story. And it was told to him by two direct disciples of Anandamoy Ma, who he knew very well and knew to be very, very truthful. So we can accept this as not a fantasy, but as a true story. It took place at Anandamoy Ma's ashram, I think in Kankal, or in Hardwar, but at one of her monasteries. I'm not sure which one. But it was a month or so after her passing. And these two devotees who had been very close to her and spent a lot of time with her, a husband and wife, were really grieving a lot. And it was a very difficult time. And one night, in the middle of the night, they both came bolting wide awake because they felt the presence of Ma in the room. And they felt, and she was exiting the room, they felt to follow. And so they walked out and they saw in complete form there, they saw Ma walking down the steps and out, and there was a little kind of a dais. And on that dais was Babaji meditating. And Babaji was there, but he had his back to them and his back to Ma. And Ma went up, and she placed her hands on his shoulder like that. And when she did that, and they were seeing all of this, it was not a dream or just a vision in meditation. They were actually seeing it all. When she placed her hands on Babaji's shoulder, a ray of light, a shaft of light went up from the two of them, and it illumined the whole sky. And so if we think of the guru in the heart, that's why I chanted that chant tonight, Sri Yogananda, in the heart of our heart, be there. So if we have Master, if we have our image of God residing in the heart of hearts, that will keep the energy flow positive, because their energy flow is completely positive. Master's energy flow is one with God. And if we keep his image there, if we keep his presence there, and if in our actions from with each other, if we act as if it's Master's vibration through us, it isn't Master acting. Ultimately, yes, it is. Ultimately, it's only Divine Mother acting. But we don't have that consciousness yet. So think of Master acting through you and you acting as a channel for Master. And in our interactions with each other, if we can hold on to, well, this is the way Master would do it, this is the way Master would react to this person, then that energy will flow positively from the heart. If it flows positively from the heart, it will magnetize the whole flow of energy in a positive way. The second attitude that is even more important, although I've talked about it some, is attunement to the guru. If we work on our attunement to Master, if that is the primary practice that we have, the primary reason that we're at Ananda, the primary thing that we're doing, if attunement to Master is first and foremost in our consciousness and in our desire, our whole life will be transformed and we will become channels for him. You know, we think back, well, Master spoke to these tens of thousands of people and went all over the country, and how lucky people were. They were drawn to him, and how lucky they were to live with him. Davy touched on it, that people were checking in and out of Mount Washington like it was a hotel. But in the same article, so this was 1948. Swami had already come. It was 3 weeks before that garden party at the Myers. He was talking about conditions at Mount Washington, and he was actually in this part of his talk, he was talking about how terrible it was that taxes were going up. That when they were first got Mount Washington, taxes were $50 a year, and now they had already gone up to $150 a year. And he said, but there are 50 of us living there, so the taxes are only $3 a person. But think of that, 50 people. That's half as many are in this room tonight. So Master's through us, the time has been right for us in our lifetime to help fulfill that dream of his, of communities and spreading communities. And much of this whole talk was about communities. And he said, and we have one that looks like it's going to get started in South America, and named the name of the man, and the man was coming here, and others are starting around the country. He wanted them to start, and he was putting out that positive vibration. Being a Master, he knew that they weren't actually going to start, but that vibration, as he said 3 weeks later, I'm sowing my thoughts in the ether, and they shall move the West. And he was putting out very powerfully. And that was just about the time when most of us were about ready to incarnate it, or had pretty freshly incarnated. And so I think he was speaking to us, not to the people at that garden party. Speaking to one person at that garden party, but not the rest of them, who probably thought he was a little bit nuts. But it is moving the West, and we, as Davy said, were part of the blessing of that. All of that flows from the desire in our hearts, individually and collectively, to be in tune with Master. If we keep that precious, precious desire alive. Everything will flow from that. I think my favorite image from all the images in India and that you might see on posters is the poster that I've seen in the image that's commonly shown in India of Hanuman kneeling at Ram's feet, and he's pulled his chest open like that, and instead of a heart, there's Ram sitting there. And if we can have Master sitting in the space of our heart, steal into my heart of heart, banish my delusions. If we have him seated in the heart of hearts, he will banish our delusions. And in another part of this, he said that when the delusion is banished and God is in that form becomes very magnetic. It's like a flower that bees are drawn to. When a collective group, and I'm not saying that we're all at a terribly high level, that's for God to decide, but as a group, if we vibrate with the desire to keep Master at the center, at the heart of our heart, and be in complete attunement with him, then that magnetism will go out. We don't have to talk about it. We just have to do it. And it will go out and it will change the West. That's what Master, my seeds are being sown in the ether and they will change the West. We are the seeds. But not individually. The desire to be in tune with Master is the seed. And the more powerfully we hold that individually and collectively, the more blessed will our life be and of greater service to the world. It's a beautiful, as Swami said there, this life will help us spiritually out of all proportion to other lives. Because in this life where it's like we're pushing back at the miasma of delusion in our age and trying to create a sacred space that is different from buying into the downward pulling energy that's prevalent in our age. We're not alone in it. It's being done by many people who are not on our path. And in other ways, it's God's vibration. It's part of Dwapara Yuga. But we are a very, very important part of it because we represent that part of Master's mission that's trying to do communities, which he said will be the lifestyle of the new age. So it's an important incarnation, important spiritually, individually, important culturally, and it will be even more important if we don't make it self-important, if we just do it. Nike was right. Just do it. And as we do that, it will take on a real power, it's a life worth leading. If we've had hundreds of thousands, millions of lifetimes, this is one of those that's worth leading and worth remembering. And then finally, and I'll just end with that, this, the third quality that we need to keep alive. So the upward flow of energy in the heart and its attendant qualities, kindness, love, compassion, caring, devotion, those qualities that move the energy up, attunement to Master, and finally, devotion to God. Because behind everything is just God's play. That's all that's going on. And if we keep devotion, keep somehow work on, in your own way, on remembering God more minutes of each day, if that can be the goal, just to remember God more minutes of each day, or even a second in each minute, if we could touch on God, it would change our lives. So that those devotional practices are very, very important for us. The more we do that, the more a bubble of God's presence and a bubble of joy will be around us. I was meditating a couple of mornings ago, actually here at the morning meditation, and I was meditating. For me, it was a very interesting meditation. I was meditating on the aspects of God, you know, the eight aspects, light, sound, power, love, joy, wisdom, calmness, and peace. I was meditating on love, joy, wisdom, calmness, and peace, and thinking about where are they located in the body, and trying to meditate on the location in the body of that vibration, and then feel the vibration. And I was moving, it starts at the heart, and I'll explain, but I was moving kind of up and down the spine, almost like doing a higher kriya, but instead of touching with a mantra, trying to feel the vibration of God's presence as he manifests at that chakra. So the heart center, of course, is the center for love. Master taught that the throat center is the center of calmness, that the forehead is the center for joy, and that wisdom is the heart, and so love and joy together produces wisdom. That leaves peace. Peace is at the medulla. It came so clearly that peace, what peace is the pulling back from conflict. And so where is the conflict or the waves of positive and negative energy stemming from the ego, which is centered in the medulla? So the ego is centered in the medulla. And if we can feel peace in the ego, in other words, the neutralization of conflict, then that's the vibration of peace. So I was just working, you know, feeling love, feeling calmness, feeling peace, feeling joy, and then feeling wisdom, and then kind of moving up. It was a very beautiful meditation. And somehow or another, I don't necessarily recommend that meditation. I just share it because it was helpful and a nice thing for me. But each of us find our little tricks in meditation of something that inspires. But the point is that we need to keep inspiring ourselves to try to feel God's presence in one way or another. Outwardly, think of him with you, him or her with you when you walk. Chant to him, sing to him or her, feel Master with you, whatever works for you. But keeping God's presence. So three things. Keep God's presence, attune yourself to Master, and keep the energy flow positive by watching the heart and making sure that moves positively. If we do those things, the result will be God's presence, enlightenment, and joy. And all of us are capable of doing that. It just takes remembering to do it, basically. It isn't hard. In fact, what's hard is that it isn't hard. The mind likes complication, and so this is kind of too simple, so we move on to something more restless. But this is very, very simple, but very, very powerful. But what it will do is it will put us deeply, deeply in tune so that we become channels for Master and for God in our lifetime. And as Master said, we are blessed by what flows through us. Well, we'll answer a question or two if there are any.
It's one we can't share.
It's some original notes that were taken down with his talk, and we suspect that the source is not one that would be happy if they were shared with others.
Well, thank you for sharing with me.
Yeah.
Yes. Hi, Stefan.
I always like to reflect on my spiritual diary, but I feel like I hardly ever get around to it. How important is that to you?
I've gone through different... Stefan asked about keeping a spiritual diary and introspecting. I've gone through... I actually found it very helpful when I was newer on the path because it helped me to kind of objectify my thoughts and see that they really were real. But now it's not that important. But, you know, it's not to say that at a future time it wouldn't be important. I think you just, we have to accept or allow ourselves the space, let's put it that way, that we are swimming in a sea of spiritual consciousness at Ananda. And whatever particular practice or technique or aid that you have that's bringing you inspiration at the time, then go with that. But I think it's not necessarily helpful, I should do this, I should do that, because that externalizes it. Just have a dialogue with Master. Give me the tools and the techniques and the approach that will keep my spiritual life fresh. And God will do that for you.
I completely agree with Davey. I would add just that keeping a spiritual diary is, in a sense, an outward way of self-analysis. And so the form is not very important, but analyzing your day, your actions, is very important. And what Swami has suggested, whether you write it down or not, is that at the end of each day, you go through the day, review the day, and look at what happened on the fields of Kurukshetra today. Who won? Did the Kauravas win? Did the Pandavas win? Look at that battle and see whether King Material Greed won that hilltop and his 100 brothers, you know, who represent all the negative qualities, or whether the Pandavas were able to take the field of action. But that is very important to do, that self-analysis. And then almost as an extension of that, then to take everything and mentally give it to God or burn it and visualize a bonfire and offer it into the bonfire. But for some, a journal can be a very, very helpful and powerful tool.
You know, I wanted to mention, and I forgot, just a little fun piece of news that we got a few days ago. A woman who's a Kriyaban, she sent this letter to Dave Arshi, lives in Atlanta, and she read online Swami's article about the economy. And in that article, he said, people should use catchy slogans to capture the government's attention. So this lady is a part of the Occupy protest movements, and there were photos. She used slogans from Swami songs. There's all these people marked.
Dare to be different.
Dare to be different. Dare to be free. Give life your heart. I can't remember all of them, but there were about four or five different slogans of Swami's, and it shows...
The protesters marching.
Right. So it was so beautiful to see that. Okay, well, if there aren't any more questions, two things we want to end with. One, I think you all received in your boxes that in this coming, starting October 26th and into 2012, we have a campaign going to called Doing Done 2011-2012 to pay off the legal debt, the Om Fund debt. And we'll be, you know, there'll be more satsangs and things in the years to come, but we did want
to... In the year to come.
But we did want to let you know the awesome and amazing fact that almost $400,000 has come in already since October 26. So, you know, we're going to do it. We're going to pay it off this year. And what that will do will just be to free this incredible energy to move forward. And I think by the end of 2012, when that's paid over, we're going to see this community take a whole new step forward. And so let's just enjoy the quiet before the explosion, because I think, as Master said to Dr. Lewis when they were sitting in a little YMCA room in Boston, "It's going to be big, Doctor, I tell you, it's going to be big." And Doctor would look around, and there'd be in this little room in the YMCA, but "It's going to be big, I tell you." So I thought we could just end by chanting Om and sending out the blessing for the Om campaign, that we can pay off the financial and karmic debt that we incurred with that, and for the blessings of Master to continue to shower down on Ananda, all the lives we touch, and that this great flow of light and joy can flood out into the world. So let's all stand. Visualizing Master with his hands uplifted in blessing, this image, you know, on the tape for the, there, that one. Yeah. And just feel his power flowing through your hands.
Yogananda Maharaj ki jai.